So where are your lay people, huh?
Oh, Ajahn, can you see us?
Yeah,
see us?
I think so.
I think let's all pay respects to Ajahn together.
What?
Yeah.
Where are they?
Pay respects to you.
You don't have any more meetings in the place where we used to give the talk?
No.
Only soon.
No. Yeah. Even in Singapore there's no like physical kind of retreats, teachings and all that. Everything is online. You can come to the temple still, but you cannot have any gatherings of people. It's very hard to. Yes, but there's no physical gathering.
So how are you doing? So you're actually in Hong, in Singapore. You're in prison, or imprisoned in your own quarters, or?
Yeah, I think most people are in their own house now.
That's right. Why I said imprisoned in your own house or apartment.
Yes. Ajahn Asing has a very big prison, that's why it's okay.
Who? Where is Asing?
Asing has a very big prison in Brunei, so it's okay.
Big prison, yeah.
Yeah, but it's a very big house.
I don't see Asing. Where is he? I hear
you
him.
Oh.
poor people, yeah. So, what are your questions, Zani?
Who has questions? You can raise it, then you can ask.
No questions,
Ajahn, eh? Ajahn, how's everything in Thailand?
What? How are things in Thailand?
How is everything?
Yeah. I mean, at least here in the monastery, everything is normal. Outside of the monastery, it is also crazy a bit, but not as crazy as in Singapore or in Australia or Brunei.
Okay. Yeah, I think Hendrik has a question. Hendrik, maybe you can start first.
Yeah.
Namaskar.
Oh, from Indonesia as well. So Indonesia, Singapore, Brunei. What other countries are there?
Oh yeah. I should tell you. So you have Asing and Linda from Brunei.
Yeah.
Then there's also Singapore. There's Meng Hao, Darren, Wajira, and Alvin. If you swipe right, you can see all of them. Hmm. And then in Malaysia, there's Sito. Yeah, I think there's Sito.
Okay.
And Hendrik in Indonesia. Yeah.
It's quite. Oh. What technique always, you know, I mean, allows us to do nowadays, yeah? All over the world, you know, we can talk to people, you know, see their faces. Yeah? So, Hendrik, what is your question?
Ajahn, when we are observing our quality of the breath, whether usually I observe long or short, is it important or is it better to observe it like just knowing rather than labeling it long or short?
When we observe the quality of the breath, we know that the breath goes in, we know that the breath goes out. We know that the in-breath might be shorter or might be longer. We know that the breath is calm or that the breath is detailed or that the breath is rough. Yeah? Okay, so Hendrik, you understand? I mean, it's important to know. Yeah? I mean, even, you know, if you can go, you know, I mean, if it is the beginning of the in-breath, if it is the middle of the in-breath, if it is the end of the in-breath, if the in-breath switches to out-breath, yeah? Try to get as close as possible to the breath, yeah? To the knowing of the breath. Yeah? This is important. Does it answer your question?
Usually I observe the breath is long all sort.
Yeah.
So usually if my mind is concentrating enough, I put some label, this is short, or yeah. this is long.
Yeah.
Or should I just release the labeling and just focus on the just moving?
That depends on the calmness of the mind. If the mind is calm, you can get rid of the labeling and just know. But you should know it, yeah? I mean, if the mind is not calm, you know, you can use the labeling in-breath, out-breath, short, long, deep, shallow, rough, you know, detailed, and so on, yeah? But if the breath, you know, if your mind is calm, then just know it. But make sure that you know it, yeah? And that's why we use in the beginning these labels, you know, that lead us, you know, to make it clear for us, the knowingness. Huh? Okay?
Okay, understand, Ajahn. Thank you.
Where's your brother? Hendrik?
He said he doesn't have any question.
he doesn't do any practice, because people who don't do practice, you know, have no questions.
he said that he's been doing practice, and then maybe I suggest say a bit what he said to me, Ajahn.
Yeah.
He 2 days ago, he told me that when he changed from become knowing of the breath,
yeah,
and then he said something like gradually become. He describes like that and become sleepy, drowsy.
Ah, okay. Then he should use the labeling again.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Because the mind, the moment the mind gets calm, you know, it gets drowsy. Yeah. Either we catch the point where the intention is there to get drowsy or to get sleepy. Yeah. And then turn it around and say, no, I want to stay awake. Yeah. If you don't catch that intention, we go, you know, we go to sleep, yeah? So, I mean, if he can't catch it, you know, he should use the labeling, yeah?
Okay. Oh, one more, Ajahn.
Yeah.
When we are observing the breath, Ajahn said before that we know the... of the breath, the middle, and then I can just observe long or short or...
Yeah.
Have to do both?
I mean, about long and short, you know, it is in the beginning. And the more, you know, the more calm the mind is, or the more detailed the mind is, then you don't need long and short, you know. I mean, you just need beginning of the in-breath, middle of the in-breath, end of the in-breath, you know, beginning of the out-breath, you know, middle of the out-breath, and end of the out-breath, yeah? Okay? Then you don't need long and short.
Okay, Ajahn. Thank you, Ajahn.
Okay, so next. Ajahn, I have a question on practice. So I noticed that lately, right, I think when the mind tends to be a bit lazy. So when in sitting after some time, when there is some calmness, the mind just goes into very passive mode, and is aware, but at the same time you start to have thoughts, but then the mind has a tendency to indulge in the thoughts. But when I realize, it's like then you kind of pulling back. But so how to bring up that sharpness and to make sure that it doesn't go into that passive mode? It didn't go into slop and torpor, but it tends to indulge in some thoughts, and then, you know, and it enjoy that peacefulness at the same time.
Yeah, that is normally a problem, you know. Whenever we go, you know, and whenever the mind gets calm, instead of staying with the breath, yeah, knowing the breath, we go to the feeling of calmness, or the feeling of happiness, or the feeling of joy. The moment we notice it, we should go back, you know, to the knowing of the breath, yeah? And if you, in the beginning, for the first few moments, you need to label it, you know, then go ahead and label it again. In-breath, out-breath, short, long, or then beginning of in-breath and beginning of out-breath. Or, you know, I mean, what is very useful, you know, that keeps the mind sharp is to realize the point when the in-breath switches to the out-breath and when the out-breath switches to the in-breath. There's a short moment, you know, where there is nothing, yeah? And try to catch that moment that keeps you awake, you know. But if you see you get into thoughts, you know, then go back to the labeling, yeah? Just for a few moments, you know, until you know again, yeah? Okay?
Okay. Actually, the other question is with, when it comes to pain, right? I notice that, okay, after a while, especially if it's a longer session, and then there is deep pain that starts to come. But over time, I think I tend to overcome that pain by going into like self. I tend to do like counting with my breathing. Mm-hmm. And over time, when I do that counting with breathing, I'm able to stay with that pain longer. But I don't think it is the right way because I kind of avoided looking into that pain.
Okay.
But from time to time, I will look at the pain, but I realize that the thing that is unbearable for me to stay with the pain is not the pain itself, but it's that feeling of impatience and the feeling of, I don't know, there's this dislike feeling. So what I do is I look at that pain a while, instead of going into that pain, then I tend to resort to just counting, you know, in, out, then I count one, two, one. But it's like a coping mechanism. And so I don't think I'm learning, right?
No, that is not the proper way to investigate pain. If you investigate pain, you have to ask questions. Yeah? You have to ask the question. So first of all, where's the pain? And then instead of, you know, going with the concentration or staying with the concentration on the breath, you go to the point where the pain is strong. No? You have to accept the pain first. Yeah? Breathe it in. Yeah? Breathe it, feel it in through the whole body. You know, you have to accept it. If you don't accept it, you're never able to investigate the pain. You understand that? And then go to the pain. And then you ask questions. Where is the pain? Yeah? Or is the pain, you know, constant? Yeah? And then you realize the pain is not constant. Is the pain point-wise? Then you might see that the pain is point-wise. Is it an area of pain? Yeah? I mean, you have to ask these questions. Yeah? And then, you know, where exactly is the pain? Yeah? Before there was no pain, now there is pain. Yeah? Where is it in the skin? Is it in the flesh? Yeah? And then look in the skin. Yeah? Is it there? Yeah? And look in the flesh, look in the bones, you know, look in the tendons, yeah? Look in the tendons, you know, look in the muscles, you know, where exactly is the pain, yeah? And if you do it like this, yeah, there will be a moment of clarity, yeah? And then the pain disappears and reappears somewhere else. That is the proper way, you know, how to investigate pain. And then you go to the next point, you know, until the pain or the kilesas, you know, will lead you to the actual, you know, the actually arising of pain, yeah? But that is a long way, so I mean, just stay with the first thing. Otherwise you're avoiding the pain, and that is not good, yeah? You really want to know, because, I mean, think about it, you know, I mean, if you do some physical exercises, there's always pain and you never mind it, yeah? You don't care about it, yeah? But in the death, there will be extreme pain. So, I mean, the better you can deal with pain, yeah? The better it is, you know, in the time of death, yeah? And nobody thinks about death, yeah?
But I think I know why, because I think there is a lot of attachment to that peacefulness. I just want to, you know, continue and don't want to be distracted by the pain.
Yes. But that's why we sit longer, yeah? And that's why we sit longer, you know, to get into pain, yeah? This is the first investigation. You have to realize, you know, investigation of pain. If we can do that properly, we can investigate any kind of feelings, yeah? No matter what kind of feelings, yeah? And be it, you know, be it physical feelings or be it mental feelings, we can ask the question, we can go there, but before we have to accept these feelings, yeah? And they are always unpleasant, yeah? So we have to learn how to accept unpleasant feelings, yeah? That is really important, yeah? And once we can accept this unpleasant feeling, you know, I mean, really, you know, really breathe it in through the whole body, feel it in the whole body, yeah? Or feel it in the chest if it is in the heart, yeah? And then ask the questions, yeah? I mean, for feelings of the heart, I mean, you ask what came before this feeling, yeah? And what came before this, and what came before this, until you find, you know, the cause of the feeling, yeah? Okay? You understand that, huh? Or is it broken now?
Yeah. Sorry, I have one more question, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm more calm and doing sitting, I feel that the breathing is like the zone of that concentration is narrowing.
Yeah.
Going to like smaller and smaller. So, but sometimes because of, you know, I'm concerned that, you know, after a while the pain will start to come and disrupt and things like that. I notice that I tend to have some personal effort trying to fine-tune and focus a bit, but I think it's not natural, right? So I should just leave it on its own accord, let it reach more concentrated, right?
Go. The important thing about, you know, I mean, observing the breath is we observe it, we don't manipulate it, yeah? You can go, you know, you can go, you know, in a way that, you know, I want to have more detail about the breath, yeah? I mean, at every you know, second, you know, I mean, how is the breath going on, yeah? That is okay, that is fine, yeah? So, I mean, if it gets detailed, the more detailed it is get, you know, I mean, the more interesting, yeah? And then even if there is pain, you won't even realize it, yeah? you have to make the object of observation, you know, very interesting, yeah? That is the key to meditation. 100% interest, and you're gone, yeah? So you're interested in what is happening right now, yeah? And if you watch the breath, how is the breath right now? At every moment, at every mind moment, you want to know, yeah? So because of this interest, of this strong interest, yeah? If you increase the interest, that is fine, that is perfect fine, yeah? If you try to manipulate the breath to make it calmer, you know, I mean, it doesn't work, yeah? But the interest, and the more you're interested, the deeper you go into samadhi. And 100% interest, you're gone, yeah? Yeah, this whole universe collapses, yeah? Okay?
Thank you, Ajahn.
Namaskar, Ajahn. Can you share how do we face negative thoughts and unwholesome moods?
Unwholesome moods, nah.
Negative thoughts, yeah.
With negative thoughts, it is very easy, yeah? I mean, whenever there's a negative thought, I mean, we just replace it with Buddha, yeah? And then the negative thought comes again, and we replace it with Buddha, and then with Buddha, and with Buddha, you know, until the mind becomes a little bit calm, yeah? And what we do then is, I mean, we go to the beginning, you know, what happened before this negative thought arises, yeah? And what happened then before? We do a retraction, you know, we follow up, you know, from what happened, you know, until this negative thought came up. Yeah? What did we see? What did we feel? You know, I mean, what did we experience? Yeah, until we come, you know, to the stone, you know, that latches the avalanche. Yeah, that is for negative thoughts. But first of all, you know, we have to accept it. You know, we just replace it. We realize that there's a negative thought. Yeah, we can even say there's a negative thought. Okay, putto. Yeah? Then it comes again. Okay, putto. Yeah, okay, putto. Okay, putto. Until the negative thought does not arise, and then we follow to the arising. You know what came before? before this negative thought aroused? What kind of feeling was there? What kind of thought was there? What kind of memory was there? What kind of experience was there? Yeah, until we come, you know, until we come to the beginning, yeah, that actually, you know, increased it. Yeah, with moods, you know, I mean, this is very difficult with negative moods, yeah, because then we would have to be. We would have to have sati, we would have to be mindful of what was going on since the morning, yeah? Or even since you know, the last night, yeah? In the morning we should check, you know, I mean, what is my thoughts, what is my memory, yeah? Because moods are deepened, you know, I mean, are deepened emotions, yeah? You can get stuck in a mood, you know, for weeks, you know, or for days, you know, and so on, yeah? So this is much more difficult. First of all, we need to get out of this mood, you know, by centering the mind on Buddha or centering the mind on the breath, yeah, until the mind is clear, yeah, and then look, you know, what is happening, yeah. Okay, understood? Yeah, go on.
Thank you. Yes, I do. Thank you.
Yeah. Understood? Huh? Yeah. It's not easy. A mood is very difficult, yeah. I mean, if you don't do the daily reflection, do it, yeah, right? then we don't catch it, yeah. Yeah. Why am I in this kind of mood, yeah? I mean, a mood, you know, I mean, normally an emotion, you know, is a boiled up feeling, yeah. I mean, it's a feeling in the memory and a feeling in the memory and together, you know, with a thought and so on. I mean, it boils up, you know, to be an avalanche, yeah. I mean, this you can easily backtrack, yeah? But a mood, you know, is this emotion coming more often and often and often, you know, so that it builds, you know, a layer of feeling, thick layer of fog, yeah? Let's say a thick layer of fog, and that is much more difficult to cut through, you know, than just an emotion that just poured up, you know, just arose, you know, from its own. But if we do our daily reflection, I mean, we see what is going on. That is the whole key, yeah? I mean, are you doing it over there in Singapore, in Malaysia, in Indonesia, in Brunei, huh? Yeah. We don't like to do it. We don't want to know what is going on. We don't want to know what we are doing, yeah? We just want to do, yeah? We just want to watch, we want to go, we want to eat, you know, we want to talk, yeah? But we don't want to know, you know, what the result of our doing is, yeah? Yeah? Linda. How many hours? Okay. So the next question.
So, wish you well, Ajahn. In some of the meditation sessions, some Asubha images appeared. The mind became clearer when this kind of images appeared. The mind kind of see the true teachings of the Buddha. Recently, instead of the Asubha images, I started to see some elements like earth element, wind element appear in the meditation sessions before the body disappeared. Is this normal from Asubha images to change to element phenomena? Should I just focus on one, but all this appeared naturally in the meditation. Yeah, Situ, I hope I asked your question correctly.
No, I mean, I think I understand the question, yeah. It can happen, yeah, to some people, yeah, that, you know, when they do a supa, yeah, then suddenly, you know, this asupa, you know, because, I mean, if I have a part of the body, yeah, I mean, it is made out of these four elements, so you can. Some people can see these four elements, but you should be very clear. You should be very clear. You know, I mean, you focus on a part of the body. No matter if it is the hand, the feet, or the torso, or if it is the skin, or if it is the flesh, or if it is an organ like the lungs. Yeah, focus on it. You know, I mean, see it clearly, and then see. Yeah, see it. You know, falling apart into the four elements. And then, you know, the next time you do it with another organ, yeah? And then you slowly understand. So, I mean, this is okay. If it happens naturally, that means, you know, I mean, the experience comes from previous lives where they have done, you know, this kind of a super practice. It's still, you know, I mean, it's still okay, yeah? But the benefit of seeing really the loathsomeness of this body, yeah, I mean, this will cut down on greed and it will cut down on hate, yeah? You understand?
So, Arjun, when I see all the images, I feel that the sense of attachment to the body actually, I feel attached to the body, but there are certain percentage of the attachment is quite a lot.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, if the attachment of the body disappeared, but it should disappear also during the day, if you don't meditate. You understand? otherwise it is not really useful. Our attachment to the body can disappear, you know, in samadhi, when we go in samadhi or when we get a really calm, you know, that we are not interested about the body. But when we come out of the samadhi in the real world, yeah, and then there is this attachment, then there is this longing for, or there is this hate coming up, then it shows, you know, I mean, a super practice has not really cut down on greed and hate yet. Yeah? Understood?
Arjun, another question. Yeah, Arjun, but yeah? Another question is, because all these phenomena, like Asubha images, elements, it actually appear naturally in my meditation. The question is, sometimes when I do the Anapanasati, all these images doesn't appear. But when the mind is calm, do I actually contemplate all these images?
The important thing about when we do a supa, we do a supa and we don't get into calm. And the other thing, when we do calm, we don't get into a supa. So when you do the breath meditation or anapanasati and these images come up, replace them with the attention on the breath. Yeah. When in a supa, you know, suddenly the calm comes up, then you have to replace it with an image of a supa. Don't mix these together, because then you don't get any results, neither in samatha nor in investigation. Yeah.
Ajahn, I have another question. In one of my meditation sessions, when the mind becomes very sweet, when the mind reached like one poisonous, out of sudden, the breath sit inside the body at the bottom, like coming out like a hurricane, like a storm, going into my body, and then like the hurricane like that, go round and then come out, sweeping out from the body. But during the whole process, because the whole body, I can feel like the whole body is turning like a hurricane, I suddenly have a really strong realization to realize that born and reborn in the samsara is very supa. The feeling is like so intense, that I can really see the real. At that moment, because normally when we talk about Anicca Dukkha, the Dukkha is very surface, but at the moment, just a glimpse of it, I saw the hurricane like turning round. I can feel very intense the Dukkha born in the samsara is so Dukkha. So there is a glimpse of realization, a true realization of the Dukkha. But after that, the mind becomes very still, that I am not able to contemplate all these things. So when I come out, for the very first time, I chant the five frequency recollection, the Jarada moment, all these things. For the very first time, I really feel the true, like, dukkha. But after that, I don't really, is it a realization or what? Because I don't really, from there, I don't really like, how would I say that I'm still clinging on a lot of like worldly things. I can't like really totally like let go of the thing. But if the glimpse of the dukkha is just like very, very intense.
This question is difficult to answer because, I mean, if any kind of realization, if it doesn't stick, yeah? I mean, it's a realization, good, but it's not deep enough, yeah? You understand that?
Mm.
I mean, just go on, yeah? Just go on with the practice, yeah, super, yeah? Yeah. And as I said before, don't mix both up, you know, when you do samatha, yeah? I mean, yes, that can happen. It can happen that when you get this insight, when you see, you know, when you see the samsara or the intense dukkha, that automatically the mind switches into a very calm mode, yeah? And sometimes it can even happen that the whole universe disappears, yeah? Then it is a really deep insight, yeah? And then something might happen, yeah? But, yeah? For this, you know, I mean, I have to see in person, you know, I mean, this is not going to work.
Yeah, okay.
Ajahn, then I think we can stop the session here today. Yeah, I don't think there are any more questions.
Mm. So for all of you, you know, I mean, all of you who listen, yeah, I mean, we all live in, you know, at the moment we all live in countries where there's a lot of fear going on, yeah? And we have to deal with the fear, you know, the fear of COVID or whatever it is called. And every day, you know, we see it in the news, we hear it in the news, you know. I mean, so many people catch COVID and so many people die. Just realize one thing. We are born, yeah, because of our karma. Yeah? Every one of us who is born will sooner or later die. Yeah? And we will die because of our karma. Yeah? There's only one reason that we die, yeah? And that is, you know, our karma, being a human being, is exhausted. Yeah? Now all the scientists, you know, and the doctors in the world, you know, find so many reasons why we die. Yeah? Some people die because of cancer, some people die because of a heart attack, you know, some people die because of a stroke, or Parkinson, or Alzheimer, or whatever. Yeah? Or even, you know, just because of a influenza, yeah? Or now it is COVID, yeah? I mean, there's no distinction nowadays, there's no distinction between influenza and COVID, yeah? I mean, there's no influenza anymore, yeah? There's only COVID. Isn't that strange? All the years before, you know, there was influenza, yeah? And people die because of influenza, mostly old people or people who have other sicknesses, they will die of influenza, yeah? But now, for the last 2 years, there's no influenza. Isn't that strange? Doesn't it make you think, you know, what is going on? Huh? Huh? Linda? Huh? So think about it, you know, I mean, we are Buddhists, you know, and we believe, you know, in the teachings of the Lord Buddha. And the Lord Buddha saw everything, you know, he knew everything, yeah? I mean, he knew even 24 Buddhas who came before him, yeah? And he knew the future of the next Buddha that comes to this earth, yeah? And he knew that this earth is not the only planet that we lived on, yeah? And he knew that, you know, there are planets, you know, that we've been on planets where there was one Buddha, yeah? Or on planets, you know, it was a very short-lived planet, you know, or on planets where there came two Buddhas, yeah? So he knew all this, yeah? And he knew why we are born as a rich person, or why we were born as a poor person, why we are born as a handsome or beautiful person, or why we are born as an ugly person. I mean, he knows karma, yeah? And he teaches us, you know, and we should believe in it, yeah? We shouldn't believe, you know, I mean, now we believe much more these scientists who tell us all these things. But these scientists, you know, I mean, today they tell us this, and the next day or in another year they tell us another thing. Huh? These scientists are just like our kilesas who constantly, you know, fool us, you know, in believing this or believing that. Now I got to this stage, you know, and then you realize after 3 months, no, I haven't got to this stage. Or if you do this, you know, you will get happy. If you do that, you will get happy. No. I mean, the I mean, these people, these scientists, or even, you know, the reporters are full of kilesas, yeah? But the Lord Buddha was not full of kilesas. He got the kilesas, he got rid of all the kilesas, and so really straight, yeah? And if we really rely on the teachings of the Lord Buddha, then whatever happens in our life is because of our karma of the previous life. And whatever we do now, you know, will be the result for our future lives, yeah? So, I mean, whoever dies of COVID, whoever dies of an influenza, whoever dies of cancer, whoever dies young or whoever dies at old age, you know, I mean, it is because of his karma. Is that understood? Huh? I mean, the fear makes us, you know, drives us into a state, yeah? Maybe you don't notice it, but it influences our thinking and we cannot think straight anymore. So when we recall that or recollect that every day, you know, I mean, we are born, so we will die. And if we are not born, we will not die, yeah? That is the way out, yeah? But we will die because of our karma, not because of anything else. And that gets rid of this fear that is already becoming a mood in most of the people, in most of the countries. They cannot think straight anymore. And we have to think straight, yeah? And that's why we need to reflect on death, you know? I mean, the Lord Buddha always said, you know, reflecting on death is always wholesome, yeah? We are born, so we have to die, yeah? And we will die because of our karma. And what happens in this life, I mean, 99% of these things, that what happened in our life is because of our karma. Yeah? And there is nothing that we can do. Yeah? I mean, we cannot protect ourselves, yeah, from anything. We cannot protect ourselves from karma. But we can protect ourselves from stupid actions and stupid thoughts that make us really feel bad. Yeah? Huh? If we entertain these thoughts that make us really feel bad, you know, I mean, this is also creating karma, you know, for another thoughts to come up, yeah, like this. Okay, understood?
Yes. Thank you, Raj.
Yeah, you're welcome. And every day, yeah, I mean, do your daily reflection every day, yeah, in the evening, after you get calm, after you have a half an hour or an hour of sitting, then do some reflection, you know? I mean, go through it, you know? I mean, you can go through it short or you can go through it in detail, but make sure, you know, that you catch the most important things that happened during that day, yeah? Your reaction, your doing, you know, and the results of your doing. That is most important. And also, you know, look at the thoughts, you know, that leads to these actions, yeah? Or look at the memories that leads to this action, okay? Understood? Yeah. So, until the next Zoom conference. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Thank you, Ajahn, for having a metta.
Well,
try out this.
Yeah.
End the session. We can just pay respects to Ajahn.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Oh, you can close it out.
Thank you.
Mm. Thank you, Ajahn.
Yeah, you're welcome. Bye.
Ajahn, people always asking about bad mood, negative thoughts.
Yeah.
And we go back and investigate. But what about good mood?
You don't need to investigate that.
Just ignore it, let it go.
There's no need. For the moment, we concentrate on the things that if you start to investigate the good mood drives you into thinking, you know. Because we are so easily taken away by these happiness or the feelings that arises, you know, and then we create a whole package of it, yeah. So I mean, investigating that is very difficult, yeah. I mean, so we stick to the things that are very easy to investigate, and whatever is very, very easy to investigate is what is not pleasant. Okay?